nice. It's a really nice sugya. A lot of nice gems in the discussion here in the Rishonim. Everyone else enjoying the sugya? Yeah, it's very soda stick, and principles are foundational. And it's going to get a little more intricate, actually. We'll touch on some of the more intricate features today. So let's pick up where we left off in the discussion of, does Yorid extend to providing a service? Remember, the paradigmatic case in the Gemara is a case where you go into your friend's property and you make some material improvement. You're boneh churvaso shel chaveiro, you're planting in his field. Does it extend to just the provision of a good, the provision of a service? So we saw two examples in the last chabura. We saw the case of, the first case we saw was the malamid case. That case is going to get a little more complicated because there's an argument to say that a malamid shouldn't qualify for yorid, but at least in the Rishonim who thinks it does qualify, that seemed to extend yorid to a case of providing service, providing education. I think Zolt was trying to argue that maybe you could view yorid as like a material improvement. I think it's a difficult argument to defend that, you know, the notion that the Talmud is a sada suyalita, that you're making material improvements to his brain capacity. I think it's a weird paradigm to think in terms of. So I think it's better just to look at this as a classic case of providing a service. And then the second example we saw was the Ramban and Bava Metzia on Daf Lamed, where the Ramban said that there's a difference between this case of saving avedas chavero. You put aside your work in order to retrieve your friend's lost object. Hiniach melachto to meisho avedas chavero. And the Ramban said that you're entitled to compensation in that case. It's different from avriachari. Why? So the Ramban said, veli nira deschar pu'ula mamona dematiliyade debal avedahu. He thought that doing this kind of service, or at least some services, rise to the level of mamona demati liyadi debal avedahu. It's as if you, actually gave money through the provision of your service to your friend, and that qualifies you as a yorid. So the Ramban here is definitely talking about schar pu'ula. He's talking about actions, provisions of goods. And he seems to be making a general claim that some provisions of services could constitute mamona demati liyadi debal avedahu. The Ramban then says it's dome to poel she'osem malacha b'shel chaveiro shalomi daito, where he thinks that there's this idea of mehane, which entitles the poel to compensation. So let's look at that sugya very briefly. Let me just mention that the Shulchan Aruch does run with this idea of the Ramban. The Rama here cites a general rule from the Ran in Ksuvis. V'chein kol adam she'osem chaveiro pu'ulo tova, lo yuchal lomar b'china masisa imad yihol v'lo tzivi sicha, ala tzarech litein lo schara. A very broad idea. It sounds like there's just a presumption in halacha that if you provide a service for your friend, there's no reason to assume that the service was done as a gift or as a volunteer. No, the background presumption is that you are doing this as kind of a yorid, right? To be paid. Anybody have thoughts on that broad presumption in halacha that osem chaver pula or tova lo yuchal lomar b'china masisa imadi al tzarich liten lo schara? Really a striking position.
Well, I don't remember if we discussed this last time. We're comfortable calling, we said Yorid has different, there were different like avenues that it could take us, what like Yadoa Tachtona, El Yona, like is it the benefit conferred? But here we're clearly in the area of you get like Schar Batel. So if it was a 30-second favor, I get 30 seconds of wages, even if I did $200 worth of benefit to you or something like that. Are we comfortable calling that Yorid also?
Yeah, it's interesting. You're saying that this is clearly working within like the Balamor's, parameters of paying for a service. It's not paying for the benefit. Is that your point?
Yeah. And even the Ramban, maybe like if I remember the Ramban, said that we're just talking about like the total amount of time that you worked for me. It's not even like if, let's say, the average, like Bob Morris said, we go by like the labor rate of what you did. Like, if you did stonework, we go by the stonework like minimum or maximum. Whereas here is like, we just literally calculate minimum wage or something like that, or Schar Batel for any person. And that's what you get for the amount of time that you did.
Well, the Sma says, you can see in Reis HaMechdal at Zion, where the Shulchan Aruch Paskins is, Kimo Shai Notel Acher Lechorach Tirfazu, just, you know, market the service, which is not, you know, not unreasonable. But if you know, I think it does make sense that the Yorid compensation for a service will be based off the service market, right? That's as opposed to Shavach market. But that could just be like
it's all your rate. It's just a question of what calculation we look at for the payment.
Exactly. Especially in the service sector, it makes sense that the net calculation will be in terms of the hana of the service, not the appreciation.
Right. Like, as we'll see, like we'll talk about Shadchanos, and like if I confer you a $80 sale or something like that, then if we're thinking about the value of the sale, that seems to be more hana based than service based.
Well, let's see. We'll see those cases in a second. Okay, so you have that formulation of the Shulchan Aruch. Evan, Evan.
Yeah, just to kind of like take a step back and highlight this, right? I think if you'd have come to me without this, I would have said that the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda is enough to compel people to perform the, I guess, societal goods that we're trying to have happen here. And I think maybe this points to like a Dr. Levine model of economic efficiency is like we're not so considered with like providing opportunities for perfectly altruistic conduct. We think that like everyone will be better off if we just like appropriately compensate or incentivize these things collectively.
You're saying this points to like an incentive model?
Yeah, I'm saying, right? Like, or else, like, why are we even being misyachis to, like, compensating you? Just, like, do the thing, because it's the right thing to do, you know?
So you're saying we want to incentivize people to, like, provide these goods, do these services, and this is the way to do it. Yeah, I think that's definitely a possible way of reading the sugya here. So, like, you know, you're thinking that you want to make sure all sidewalks are shoveled, so you say, hey, you know, whoever shovels a sidewalk is going to get compensated.
Wait, no, but I think it's more than that. So let me just like it's very easy to imagine a world where, right? Like there are mitzvos that are expensive, right? Well, what's the reason that Hashavas Aveda should not be expensive, right? Like there's no like predicate theory that says like, oh, you have to spend a chomesh on Chanukah lech, but Hashavas Aveda punk you should get paid for, right? So clearly there's some conception here that like for we are relating to some probably like some reality that we're trying to deal with. I don't think it's just stam that this is like, you know, sense, right? And whatever, we could get into what type of mitzvah Hashavas Aveda is, right? You know, but it's like it's a pasuk, right? So it's not a
Notice, by the way, that the Ran that Shulchan Aruch is quoting generalizes beyond the Shavas Aveda, right? It's v'chein kol adam she'osem chavera
pula. For sure, and that, I think that's what I'm trying to highlight, right? The fact that he lumps it all together. It's like there's this category of things that are like people performing acts for other people. We're not like being misyachis did as like a mitzvah. We're being misyachis did as like this is how societies work, and so we're going to like lubricate it in an efficient way.
Yeah. Very interesting. Yeah, and I would also point out that this formulation really draws out the contrast to the American system or the Western system, where the presumption is if there's no contract, it was a volunteer service. You know, you shovel my walk when I'm away. The presumption is that you did it voluntarily. In halacha, the presumption is lo yuchalomar b'chinam asisi madi. So that contrast is very striking. Zacharia?
I think it's actually, that's not, I don't know, I think that's kind of a very extreme position. Like the first half of the Ramban was totally saying exactly what you are saying. And he said the main distinction between all these cases is that every other case of Mavriach Ari is voluntary. And anytime something is voluntary, no matter how much you spend, we assume it's a mechila. And one difference about a Shavuos Aveda is that it's the mitzvah, and he has to do it anyway. So if he has to do it anyway, we can't justify in Umdadas that there is that mechila.
Right. So, my sense is that the Ramban is offering those as two separate answers. So if there's the Ika Lemeimar, that's the...
No, I'm with you. I don't think that's the Ramban's final approach. But I think that still is a pretty standard, pretty reasonable chiluk in contrast to this Ran.
Correct. You're pointing out that the Ran may not be in broad company.
Yeah.
I would say, though, that it's interesting that the Ramah just, you know, runs with the Ran. You know, the Ramah seems to adopt it, which is even more striking if you're right that, you know, he's in a limited group of... in a limited camp of Rishonim on this. Yeah. Pisnei Choshen also runs with this Ramah afterwards, so it's seen as pretty influential. But I think Zachariah is right that, you know, there may be a lot of Rishonim who disagree with it. Zolt?
Is this suggesting that there's a formal chiyuv to pay, and that, like, the volunteer, I guess, can volunteer not to take it, be mochel effectively? Or that the volunteer, the yored, has the right to accept, like the Hasalbian right to accept payment if he so desires. Like which one? What? How do we assume the money transaction is happening here?
Oh, I think it's assumed. So explain to me the tut stadim again.
And then do we assume that effectively he is like a poel, and that you actually owe the poel money, in which case the poel can refuse the money, it can be mochel on the salary, or do we on the compensation, or do we assume that no, the poel has like the right to demand the money, and that you don't have a right to refuse him, but until the poel actually asks for the money, you have no chiyuv to pay him. Like, is there
I see what you're saying, Zolt. The thing that's confusing me is you haven't mastered Hofeld yet. That's a really annoying thing for me to say. But the Hofeldian way to say it is you would say that he has a power, right? The point that the service provider has a power to create a chiyuv tashlum in
the... Yeah, okay. So the question is, does he have the right to accept the money, or does he have the power to accept it?
Exactly. Does he have a present claim right to be compensated, or does he just have a power to generate a claim right to be compensated, right? That's what you're getting at?
Yeah, or maybe, yeah, and I guess also on the other side, like the reverse. Do you have a duty to pay, or do you have a liability?
Yeah, hard to know. So I think it's an interesting question. What's the underlying mechanism here? I think it's related to that question. I think it's going to relate to the broader question, and I want to hold off on this. Are we dealing with some sort of claim of like unjust enrichment or an implied schiras? That might affect your question.
I mean, I feel like it's very important, like in terms of like bunch of chosh mishpat issues, like speikot and moshi v'chavero, and like all sorts of things.
Yeah.
And the yorsh and chiyuv yorshim, and like the chiyuv for, like, you know, you can list a bunch of nachaminas. So.
Yeah, we should definitely keep that question on our radar screen. I think it's going to be related to something we're going to talk about later today about the right to say. The power to say tol eitzcha v'avonecha or eitzai v'avonai ani notel. So, you know, is this like a real obligation, or are there some easy ways to get it, like to reverse it? That's going to be related to the issues you're pointing out now. So let me move to the next next case. This is what the Ramban was leaning on. The sugya in asochar asomnim anayin vavamid aleph. It's a small passage in this Gemara. The Gemara here says, anybody want to tell us the case? What's going on here in this Titania? Any volunteers? Zolt, you want to tell us?
Well, this is last year. The figure of general talking about Sofer at the Omnin, and the figure of general talking about one person hires on behalf of another person. Workers, and there's like a whole dispute. He tells them different numbers. So the Gemara, one a part of that Tashak Batari, the Gemara quotes this right, that in general, if a software deployed loss of show up, I hire a worker and I tell the worker to work in someone else's field instead of in my own
field. You hire a worker for yourself.
Yeah, for yourself.
Lasos bishelo. But then, hereyu bishel chavero.
Then you show him the other field.
Exactly, right? So, Yakir hires me to do grading for him, but then he starts telling me to grade, right? He gives me papers of his TA or whatever to grade that guy's papers. Right. So Yakir hires me, but he's assigning me to do work for somebody else. It's even more analogous to Shua, for example, right? Shua's firm hires him, but then they assign him for clients. Something like that. Right. So Hasokas Po Lasos Bishalo Behareyu Bishal Chaveiro. I mean, the client example is not a good example.
Is this accidental?
What's that?
Does he accidentally show his fellow?
It doesn't seem like it's accidental. It sounds like it's intentional.
Well, it could be an addition. It could be like I hired like a snowplow to plow, my driveway. He finished in like quicker than I assumed he would finish. So I said like, okay, also go and plow like my neighbor's driveway.
Yeah, great example. Great example. Or let's say, you hire a house cleaner or something, and then you tell the house cleaner, like, oh, you finished here? Like, go do my neighbor's house or something like that. So the argument is, no se lo schara mishalem, you pay, so yeah, go ahead, Zolti.
So you pay the worker for the full schar that I guess you stipulated originally. And then the person who had hired as the employer can then go towards his friend and ask his friend to pay him everything that he was nene.
Yeah, exactly. So what seems to be going on here is that it's a vicarious yored, right? You're mashbiach somebody else's property, just not through your own action, but through the actions of your employee. So that's a yad poel kiyad rabo. So you're mashbiach through the services of your poel. Now, the Gemara seems to say that you're entitled, the employer is entitled to recover from the beneficiary, mashehenehu. That seems almost like a direct application of the yored sugya. No, you're literally getting compensated for the benefit you confer. Rashi here says, katani nota mi balabais masha heno, so vi afal pisha lotziveyu bare heno sovakach. Even though the neighbor didn't request you to provide this service, you're entitled to be remunerated just because you conferred a benefit on him, right? So doesn't this seem to be like a straightforward application of the yored sugya? Yeah, I mean, this is the sugya that the Ramban's appealing to in his case. And to me, this sounds very much like a schar pe'ula example. I guess you could say there's maybe some material improvement but it is a case of a sofer as the po lasos bishalo behareyu bishal chaveiro. So what do you think? Do you think it depends on what kind of pula he's doing? Or is it reasonable to think that this would apply to any kind of service that he provides? The Ramban cited this Gemara to prove this proposition. Blah, blah, blah. Dischar pe'ula mamona demata liyade debal avedahu vidami lepoel she'otza malacha b'shel chaveiro shalom midaito. And he cites Ayin Vav. Do you think the Ramban, it's interesting. Do you think the Ramban is citing this Gemara just as like a Yored paradigm, or he's citing this as a Schar Pe'ula example? What substantive work do you think the Ramban thinks this Sig is doing?
let's see, like Zachariah was mentioning before, like the Ramban's, one of the Ramban's central points is how and why to differentiate Hashavas Aveda from like Mavriya Hari. And it seems like his main point here is that it's Schar Pu'ula, that there's a difference between Mavriya Hari, which is it's a benefit, but we don't call it like a employable benefit or like a something like that. Whereas like here, there's a real, when there's some, like, and we said that because Hashavas Aveda is, it's in your hands and like kind of like you're working with a physical object as opposed to just the abstract chasing away the lion or something like that, that we can classify that as a pu'ula.
Yes and no. I mean, I want to empathize. I think that the important phrase here is schar pu'ula is mamona d'matal yadei d'bal avedahu, right? So it's not the aveda coming back to him that's significant. It's the Ramban's making a general point that schar pu'ula is a real monetary, right? It has bona fide monetary value.
I mean, you're saying Hashavas Aveda falls into that category because it's a pu'ula and not a Mavriya Hari. It's not a pu'ula.
Exactly. His point is that Mavriya Hari is, it sounds like he wants to say, that's just siluk dochko. That's the contrast Ramban is drawing. Some cases are siluk dochko. Some cases are schar pu'ula, are considered mamona d'matul yadei d'bal avedahu. What's considered just like relieving pressure and what's considered, generating income for somebody. I think for modern economists, it's a very hard distinction to draw, right? Like why, if you're saving money on the balance sheet, sometimes better, it's not taxable, right? What's really the difference between preventing a loss from somebody and causing them income? Although psychologically, there's definitely a difference. The Ramban uses these two phrases. He says, siluk dochko, and... siluk dochko mimenu is the real phrase the Ramban uses. Delomati liyade debal aveda ela mechilas chovo shalzeh, the siluk dochko mimenu. Okay, but either way, the Ramban appeals to this sugya, at least in my mind, to substantiate the claim that providing a service is compensable under a theory of mahane. Okay.
Did you have some objection to this on Thursday? Did you not like the Rambam's proof? Wasn't it?
On Thursday?
Yeah, wasn't it something you were suggesting that you seemed to like, you were like posing as an open question that like, oh, what do you think this Gemara as a proof for the Ramban? And then you didn't present, since none of us, I guess, had seen the Gemara, you didn't really present what you thought, which seemed to be against the Ramban.
Yeah, it's just not obvious to me that I'm a little unclear about two things. In the Gemara itself, you could say that Hareyu Bishel Chaveiro is a case of you had the guy go and landscape your friend's field. So it could be like a real bona fide material improvement. It doesn't have to be a service. So there's a way to read the Gemara where this Gemara is not about a service at all. That's not necessarily a problem for the Ramban if you read the Ramban as just saying over here, sorry, that the schar pu'ula mamona d'matal yadei is dummy lepoel she'osam malach b'shel chaveiro shelo midaito, and he's not requiring that the Gemara in Ha'omnim be a case of material benefit. So I'm a little on the fence of those things. The Ramban trying to show that schar from, is the Gemara in Ha'omnim supposed to show that hareyu b'shel chaveiro is a case of schar pu'ula? Right? Or is the Ramban trying to show just that there's a yored entitlement to compensation from the case in Ho'omnim? That's what I'm on the fence about. If it's the latter, though, I'm a little puzzled why he quotes that cryptic Gemara in Ho'omnim rather than the classic yored paradigm. You'll see the Ramban in a lot of other cases in Shas appeals to yored directly. So that's what I'm a little unsure about in this Ramban.
Is it possible, like it's what you're arguing, that there is some type of explicit appeal specifically to employment type of yored, and that maybe is there ever seen employment yored cases, and it'd be one of them versus like yored
tachavir
or tabahana?
Yeah, very possible. Very possible. Yeah. You know, the nafkamina here, I would say, is how much is the schar hana, right? Like how much chozer no tuva abayis masha ha'aneyu? Is that the, like this, like as you were saying, or as Dan was pointing out before, is that the service value or the actual, like, you know, conferred benefit value, the improvement value? That would be one way of deciding that question.
Like in the context of the Gemara and Bava Metzia, it seems like it's based on the amount that they're hired for. Like, because the whole question in the Gemara is like, you send like one worker to go hire other workers, right? And you tell, you know, the worker A to like hire them for three, but then he hires them for four. So, you know, he can collect the fourth, I don't know, whatever dollar, assuming, you know, pre-modern minimum wage. He can collect the fourth dollar from you. So it's like interesting that like on the one hand the Brisa that it's quoting is saying like Masha Henehu, but we're using that to show that, you know, the thing that the Baal Bais has to pay for is the schar. It sort of like kind of indicates that maybe it's more like schar based and less about the hana that he's receiving.
Right. Right. Well, your point is that I tell you to hire a worker, right? So I say hire for three and you go and you hire for four. So the idea would be that I would have to pay three and you would pay the differential, right?
Yeah, and then I can collect that fourth one from you.
Oh, is that the argument?
I think that's what Rashi is saying, unless I, Z, am I wrong?
Let's see.
Al korchi the baal bais nisiv arba.
Right. So let's say. Right. Meaning, if the price of labor is four, then you could just circumvent, I guess, the amount he wanted to hire them for, and opt for this kind of yorid example, this yorid basis, right? Meaning, you got four utils of hana, you got to pay the four utils of compensation, right, Noah? That's the argument.
Yeah, and the amount of hana I'm getting is the amount. I'm getting the hana of like these workers working for me. So it's like, correct. Uh-huh. So maybe like the Ramban's quoting this as like a way of saying that like a person's time is really like mamona de matili de balavida. It's the Ramban's quoting this as a way of saying that like, yeah, actually a person's time is monetized. But then you have to say like why that wouldn't be true with Mafri Achari.
You say Mafri Achari is a trivial amount of time that like for me to shoo away the lion is like we
has
can't
ever
call
been Mafri Achari?
I assume if you don't get it done quickly, you're not getting it done at all.
That's right. Yeah, I think there's a way to massage this perfectly. So that's what I'm still a little puzzled about in the Ramban here, but we could give this more thought. We don't have to nail it down here. So I think Noah, you're right about this suggestion, but I think your last qualification is also right. Right? I mean, it can't just be that people's time has value and that you know, there's a market for labor and that's like the right way to quantify it. It can't just be that point. Okay, let's look at let's just go. We have our Shud Rashba and Chilek Dalad Simen Kuf Chav Hey. So remember, this is the case of Reuven brings non-Jews to Shimon's store. Apparently, there's a minug to pay a commission for bringing people to your store. Shimon says, the store owner says, I don't have to pay it because I never agreed to pay the commission. Right? Enochai beklum official hisne beklum. Is Reuven, who brings the customers into the store, entitled to a commission? So the first answer the Rashba gave was our Darshina Lashon Hedyot Sugya, right? That there's a minog, then the minog is controlling. But But the second answer that the Rashba gives is yored. So tell us about his yored answer. Od ma ben yored l'sada chaver shelo b'rishos minata. So who wants to tell us about this answer? So the first answer says that you're chayv to pay because of it's as if there's a tnai meforish called varm shenagu bam rabim stam ariu ketnai meforish. Then he says, oh, and ma ben yored l'tosad shel chaver shelo b'rishos minata v'hishpicha l'yored l'chanuso v'hishpiach mekchal v'makom shenagu l'tein tzchar al zeh. So what's he saying?
Well, it seems like it starts with seeming like he's saying that this is like literally the same thing as Yored, but then that those last four or five words, whatever that is, really like Yored doesn't only apply in a place where the minhag is to pay Yored, it seems like, from our gemaras that we've seen.
Good. Yeah, I think you're exactly right to point to the tension between the Reisha and the Seifa here. He starts off strong with Yored, and then he's maskil by Yored, and he's misayim with minhag. But actually, I think there is a way to reconcile those. Similar to what Noah was getting at, I think, with Rashi on the Gemara 9 Vav, that there could be a certain degree of subjectivity slash to be determined by conventions whether something is in fact a valuable shvach. You know, I think it's okay for the halacha to say in these cases that whether in fact you received a benefit depends on what, like whether this is a benefit that has market value in your society. You see that? So the Rashba is saying, look, in a society where there's a, this service is commodified as evidenced by a practice to pay for this kind of a service, you are considered to be mashbiach somebody by giving him that market value service. You see that, Adin? I actually like the Rashba, but I think it's a pretty sophisticated way of looking at shevach or mahana.
But are we saying that when it comes to tangible improvements, like I plant a tree, is that just the same thing? Like, oh, since our society views trees in the backyard as a shevach by the fact that houses with trees in the backyard sell for $5,000 more. Like what would be the reason to distinguish between planting a tree and that? And then I could very easily say, like, oh, our society values sales because when you sell a TV, you get $500. So clearly me getting you that sale is the same thing as me planting a tree for you.
Yeah. Okay. So let's figure this out. So I think, I think you're right. I think the Rashba here, the way I'm reading it, is actually saying that even in the Yored case, so let's to put it in these terms, it's anti-Rabbi Bleich, right? It's moving us away from the obsession, from the, like, it's not things, it's not that I gave you a thing or that I, made your property look nicer, that I added something to your property. The real principle of Yored is that I was mashbiach, right? I increased value. He says, "Nata v'hishbicha liyored l'chanuso v'hishbiach mekcho b'makom shenago l'itein schar al zeh." So I read this as saying that in a place where a person, where you wouldn't pay for this kind of service, you know, this is not considered to be a market shvach. It's not the service that's kind of paid for it. So there's no mamona dematliyat liyade debalabayis. But in a case where that service is considered to have a market value, so then you were mashbiach. There's mamona dematul yad. That's exactly right. I think the Rashba is moving us away from this distinction between material and non-material improvements, to mean that if that's meant in a physical sense. And he's saying what's really important is that there's shevach in commodifiable value. Does that make sense, Adin?
Yeah, but are we, like, with the much simpler reading would just, like, I think this is clearly motivated by a desire to see service and tangible improvements as the same. And like we mentioned, that there are rationales for not that, and that would seem to it seemed that like just saying, oh, the Rashpa sees a distinction between service and like a service is commodifiable, is like we go by commodity, but if I plant a tree, that's a tree, and that tree has objective value, whatever we want to call that, which would seem to I don't know, just make things be a little bit simpler. Maybe that's not a real motivator that we care about.
You're saying the Rashpa's theory is simpler and that it's just all about market value, Shava?
No, I'm saying, so the fact that we haven't seen anyone else mention, I guess maybe, so what if we're going with this like overarching that, oh, Yorate is all about, we haven't seen anyone else mention, like, oh, but just so you know, Yorate only applies, like Yorate the Tofsad Chavero only applies in a place that the minhag is to pay for more. That, which we could say is just implicit in the entire idea of Shevach in the first place. But
that's right. Meaning Shevach, in order to make an argument for Shevach, there has to be Shevach, right? And we're going to define Shevach by, is this a commodity that has a market value? Now, I think that's really important, Adin. So let's go back to the Ramban for a second. Suppose that Minyas Dochgo in certain societies has a clear-cut market value. Remember, the Ramban said that Mavriach Ari is just Siluk Dochgo Mimenu as opposed to Mamona Demata Liyadeh. But suppose you live in a society where, like, if I get the IRS off your back, that's Mamona Da'asa Liyadeh. You know, that's not Siluk Dochgo. So if that's the kind of thing you normally pay a lawyer or an accountant to do, then yeah, that's Mashbiach. No? I mean,
we're going to implicitly limit Yorade to only things that are like jobs, kind of. Like which seems different. Like to say that, like, oh, it's not considered Shevach unless normally people pay someone to do this is like a very strange pull in terms of how we understand, like you said, the balance sheet. Like usually we're looking now at just like how many 1090s have people filled out for this type of job before. And that's how we know if it's considered Shevach or not.
Exactly. You don't, you find that unreasonable. I think there's something very sensible about that.
Yeah, I guess it's, so we're shifting Shevach from understanding, like, so why is it that we care about how, like, it's like, oh, the Shevach that you've invested when I plant your tree, oh, before your house was worth $10,000, now your house is worth $11,000. Like, that Shevach isn't what matters. The Shevach seems to be just in the, if the Shevach is entirely how much you would pay for this, then, like, why does the property value matter? It should literally just be the schar that you would have. And, like,
okay, I see what you're getting at. Okay, does everyone understand Adin's point now? I think Adin's objection is that If you run with the Rashba's idea here, that it's all about b'makom shenagu litein schar al zeh, I guess that limits you to like a bala maor theory of paying for services.
Yeah.
How are you ever going to make sense of shevach yasa al hotzah, right? The appreciation of the market value of the thing. How would you ever make sense of that? Adin, is that a way of putting your objection?
Yeah, I don't think that's not where I was going initially, but that's like, I think I found myself on the way there.
Yeah.
Like over the course of it.
Yeah, what do you make of that? I think it's a pretty interesting point. Right, Adin's saying that you have to be thinking in a Balamor framework to, if my interpretation of the Rashba applies to all cases of Yorade, not just service Yorades, then you're locked into thinking of all Yorid cases in terms of the ball of more of like, what's the market value for the service? Does that make sense? I would say, well, one thing I could say in response, yeah, Yoni?
I think you can make two responses. I think you can say like, there are actually in economies, maybe there are two different forms of compensation that exist for services. We compensate based on service value, as in like the market value pay for compensation for an employee, and for things, for actual items. So then we talk about compensation in terms of objective increase in value. So I guess you could make a distinction in that sense.
Yeah.
But also, I'm not sure I agree with your read, Itamar, that you need to have this strong read of the Rashba that pushes against. Like, I'm not sure why the Rashba of all Shitas is the one that, like, pushes you against, like, the existence of actual compensation in what you're doing. I think, I understand, like, the objection to a Blaise-type argument for all services. But I don't know why the Rashba would compel you. I think the Rashba's argument is just that the fact that there's a minhag is what proves that there is an actual compensation. Because who says that, like, advertising or bringing in customers has any, is a compensationable job? Like, who says that that's a compensationable benefit? So that's what the minhag is, to showing you it's a benefit, and that there's something you can point to, that there's like, oh, I brought you this actual benefit. The fact that people get paid proves that it's an actual, it's a thing. It's some type of market benefit.
So just flesh out your second, I fully understand your second point, Yoni.
My second objection is that I'm not sure, I think that Adin's problem is that you can retain the Rashba as within like a Rashi reading of like Shevach Yoter Me'Hotzot, that here too you're still paying based on like Shevach versus Hotzot.
Meaning he's just talking about whether, so I think I was gonna say something along the lines of the second answer then, meaning let's distinguish between the amount you pay and how much, sorry, let's distinguish between the question of whether you received a benefit with market commodifiable market value and how much you have to pay for that. The Rashba is here interested in the first question. He's not taking a stance in how much you have to pay in compensation.
Yeah, he's saying the fact that there is payment for this usually is proof. Like I was saying that, like clearly, like the difficulty is that like some services are clearly benefit conferring even absent. Like I said, oh, advertising, is it really clear? Is the person going to buy it anyway? Like the fact that someone pays sees it, the market sees this as a real service, right. And okay, with it, and so that just proves that okay, that gets us to the baseline of Shevach exists, and then we can go a different route in terms. Then we get into the next level of questions. Okay, so like, what's the payment? Like, there's exactly. There's a relationship that actually exists now.
Exactly. Which is, yeah.
Okay. I like that.
I think that's the way. I think that's the way to go to address that issue. Right. Distinguish between, in order for this to qualify as your rate, it's got to be a real market commodity. How much you're going to pay for the market commodity, you could still, you know, declare whether it's going to be for the service or whether it's the Shevach. There's still room to ask that question. Good. Let's look at the next cases. So these are, especially in more yeshivish circles, these get people very excited. Shadchanos is like an industry and every din Torah is suing somebody for Shadchanos. It's wild. Either shadchanos for like a shidduch or shadchanos for referring a deal. I've sat with these more like yeshivish dayanim, and they say that it's, you know, like in Muncie, it's like, oh, I mentioned the girl's name at a family simcha, and you know, you ended up going out with her, so like I should get shadchanos for it. Like these are like real. I mentioned a property that was going up for sale, and then you bought it. Like even if you're not a licensed broker or anything like that, just like the fact that you somehow like were involved in a deal is, you know, gets people very excited about being entitled to referrals and commissions. So the Shulchan Aruch here in Siman Kuf Pei Hey.
Do you guys get any of those cases or just Munzer?
I haven't sat on a Shidduch Shadchanos case, but a lot of real estate brokerage commission cases. But like Hamish ones, you know, like a guy was trying to, this is my favorite case. A guy was trying to flip a property. Anybody know what flipping is? So it's a very Hamish industry. So not in the non-Hamish sense. So there's the non-Hamish sense of like flipping, which is also pretty Hamish, which is, you buy a property, you invest like $10,000 in like repainting and redoing the floor, and then you sell it at a $50,000 markup, right? You know, that's like sort of legitimate because you buy the property, you invest, and then you sell it for its new market value. But then there's Hamish flipping, which goes like this. It's you find a property for sale. You tell the seller that you're going to buy it. Okay. You don't sign with him yet. You find a buyer and you tell him that you have a property that you own that you want to sell. And you finagle things so that you basically sign both deals at the same time. You say that you tell the buyer, that this would-be buyer, that you have a contract, that you purchased a house, and you're going to flip the contract to him. But you don't yet sign with the seller until you have the buyer locked in. Now, the reason why you do this is because you buy the property for $1 million, and you don't tell this... You don't tell the would-be buyer how much you're actually buying it for. You you sell it to him. You say, "Oh yeah, I'll sell it to you for $1.1 million." That's the.
This only works in communities in which Zillow isn't allowed on the kosher internet.
That's right. Or if a property is not posted on Zillow.
Yeah.
Right. So this is apparently a thing that's done. The problem is that everything blows up in your face if the buyer realizes that you don't own the property yet, and he just cuts around you and says, and goes straight to the seller. So we had a din Torah like this, such a great case, where a guy tried to do this. He said, oh, he told this buyer that he has a contract on a property. He's going to flip the contract to him for $1.1 million. Apparently, this is like a thing that's done in the industry. But the buyer, I guess, was a little smarter than the flipper. And he kind of just, he's like, oh, let me inspect the property. He sniffed out who the real owner is. And then he just cut out the flipper. So the flipper was really upset by this. And he sued, oh, this is tortious. He said, this is tortious interference with contract. Don't worry about what that means. But he basically said that the buyer interfered with his contract with the seller, because the seller was going to sell it to the flipper, but for the interference of the buyer who approached him and said, sell it to me directly. To make a long story short, he argued that he should be entitled to either the spread that he was going to make on the flip or to shadchanas. At worst, he's a shadchan, right? I mean, he introduced the buyer to the property. That's a pretty interesting argument. But that's an interesting case, right? He's appealing to this value of conferring the benefit of working as a broker when he in fact was trying to work as a flipper.
So what did you guys find?
What do we do in the case?
Yeah.
We actually, in the decision, we wrote two theories. We said there's an argument to say he's not entitled to anything since he was trying to work as a flipper. And there's an argument to be made that if you're trying to make the spread on the flip, you can't always fall back on the mashbiach mahana argument, because that's not what you were trying to do, right? You weren't trying to be mashbiach. You were trying to make profit for yourself. But then I'll show you the makar that we relied on actually in this decision. What we did was we actually gave him something for being mahana. Sure. We bought the shadchan argument in this case. But I'll show you why. I'll show you why in a second. What's that?
Who is we? Who is we?
Who are the other two in the case?
Yeah, let's say on a...
Yeah, I'm trying to remember who the third guy was. I'll tell you in a minute. I'll tell you in a minute. But let me show you the makar that this case turned on. But even the Shachar Chan Zimin Kuf Pei Hei, he says, Kol Sarsur Shehodia Lilokeach Shechif Et Zeu Karka Zeshel Reuven. Oh, sorry, that's not wrong. The second half here is important. Zimin Kuf Pei Reuven Hayolo Bayis Limkor Uba Shimon Visirser Limokor Lelevi. So Reuven was going to sell a house. Shimon made the shidduch to Levi. So Shimon said, he brokered it to Levi, basically, right? He said, sell it to Levi. Levi's looking to buy. V'amar Reuven shelevi sono v'ena rotza limkarlo. Reuven said he hates Levi, he'll never sell to him. And then, of course, V'achakach machal Levi al yidei acher, he just cut out Shimon. He cut out the broker. So chayiv litein l'Shimon sar seruso. You still have to pay schar sar sor to Shimon, because Shimon provided the service, right? Shimon made the introduction. Shimon introduced the two parties. So the gra here said, that's not interesting in and of itself, right? You could have said, oh, there's some minog to pay in these cases, and it's the minog to pay a commission that governs, like the Rashba said in the Tshuva. But look what the gra here says. Anybody want to walk us through the gra? What does he say here about... Shu, you want to read us, take us through this gra here, Reuven?
Yeah, I just need to pull it up on my computer because I'm on my phone. But give me 1 second. Sorry, my computer's very slow.
No problem.
Here we go. Here we go. Reuven, Shmeshram Taima, the Sersa Notel Schar, Aval Pishlo Shalcho. It's like it's like a yored. I mean, kama,
blah blah blah.
So you have yored. Yeah, v'chei b'sirser kiven shu also limkor, because it's I guess like that's the general market practice. So when this guy does it,
it's like a sada suyalita, right? I mean, you're. So the what's interesting here is the gras cites the Maharam that the compensation for sarsur is grounded in the idea of yored l'sada chavera, and he says therefore he's no tel skar afa pishalo shalcho v'asarsur b'me'atzmo. You didn't request the sarsur to do this service; he came on his own. Whatever, you're obligated to pay him. So you have like take a shadchan case. Shadchan makes a suggestion. Says, oh, I think it'd be really great if you went out with so and so. You didn't ask the shadchan for the suggestion. It sounds like there's an entitlement to compensation just mitam yored, no? So it's the provision of the benefit in a pure service area, right? There's no real mashbiach here. It sounds like it's the pu'ula. That's I guess the right way to think of a brokerage. And there's a basis for compensation.
Sure. It's still different. Still different from your case, though, I would think.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you about my case in a second. Yeah, I'll tell you the marker that we thought was relevant to our case.
Oh, it was not this, my bad. Okay.
No, not this one yet. Not this one yet. Here, I'm just establishing what's relevant for our sugya, which is the fact that the chiyuv sarsur and shadchan is mitam yorid. That's what's striking, right? Look here at the gra in Siman Pei Zayin. Look what he says here. Din hashad chanos kasav maram shehumi din yored l'sada chaver shelo bershus shem haisa sada suyalita omdin kam adam rotzalitin b'sada zulanota v'hu kemo sarsur moshe kasavti v'simen kuf pei hei. So the gra says that a din shadchen is the same as a din sarsur, and you can see the Pischi Choshen like runs with this idea. He has a whole section on din shadchanos v'sarsuros. I told you in the yeshivish communities, this is like a whole area of litigation. Pischoshan has a whole section on this. He says afilu lo bikesh mimenu sheyitaveh hoshi shadich lo chayav l'shalim schar haroyla. Now the makar that I thought was interesting. This comes out of the Aruch HaShulchan, and this is what we based our decision in our case on. Shua, do you want to tell us the Aruch HaShulchan? Can you read this? It's cited here in the Pischei Choshen. You can just read it here. Look at this case.
Kalsu Baruch HaShulchan, Shomer Shleach Liknas L'Chefetz, V'Kana Shleach La'atzmo. So this is a classic example of a breach of fiduciary duty.
That's right.
On behalf of the agent. Af Bofen HaMoel, open a moel.
In some cases,
in some cases,
the halacha will do what, like in secular, it creates like a fiduciary trust. You just, even if he bought it for himself, we just say he bought it
for
Mishaleach.
Right. And lo yada shleach me'achevet rak me'amishaleach chayv l'shalim l'schar sarsur. Interesting. So even if like in the case where like we will let the shliach keep it, he's still going to be mechuyev to pay. That's a very cool arachah shulchan.
Yeah,
that's very cool.
I found this arachah shulchan.
This is unjust enrichment, like what we were talking about the other time, right?
Yeah. But hold off on the unjust enrichment thing. So when I found this arachah shulchan, that's what pushed me in that case to give the guy some, to give the flipper some schar. And the argument is that even, right, so I think what's interesting about the case is that in arachah shulchan, the guy wasn't intending to act as a sarsor, right? I tell Shua to buy a property for me. I'm not intending to be mashbiach Shua in any way. But if Shua goes and buys it for himself, and it's a case where the halacha permits him to keep it for whatever reason, Shua has to pay me for the benefit that I conferred upon him of introducing him to the property. So, and you notice the arachah shulchan says, "Achayv l'shayim lo schar sarsur." Im lo yada hashliach me'achepet rak me'amishaleach. If I was really the thing that introduced Shua to the chepetz, then I conferred a valuable benefit on him. So I thought this was analogous to the flipper case, meaning it's true that the flipper was trying to, you know, make the spread on the commission. But in the end of the day, the buyer only knew about the property because he saw the advertisement of the flipper. The flipper walked him through the property. He brought him to the property. So I think what the Arachah Shulchan is getting at is that that's enough to constitute mehane for collecting sarsuras.
It's interesting because I think you have like a klar dimyon if you look at it from the perspective of the guy who gets the hana'a or the schar, but it's like less clear if you look at it from the other direction in terms of like good faith action and like, right? Like this guy is like, he's in a shalach, he's doing everything by the book. I mean, I don't know, the flipper, maybe I guess flipper is also, it sounds a little more shady.
Like who's on the right end, who acted in good faith and who acted in bad.
Right, and that's why I said unjust enrichment, because like to me, right when I read this, and I agree it's this is like a facial intuitive thing. I hadn't thought about this before. It sounds to me like what the arachah shulchan is doing is saying, here's a guy who's been wronged. Let's use some quasi-contractual theory to like get him some compensation. So it's not that like we think he's a sarsor, it's that we think something bad happened, so let's like rely on some category that we have to like react to that.
I totally agree. And that's why even in our decision, we basically said like we hear the argument that he shouldn't be entitled to get anything because that's just a risk a flipper takes when he tries to make the spread rather than to work as a broker. So yeah, like you try to fasta maruba lo tafasta, right? If you try to like work as a flipper and get the spread, you run the risk of it backfiring in your face. But on the other hand, and as you say, Shua, right? So just that there's like who was acting in good faith, who was acting in bad faith. But on the other hand, like you could just say the Arachah Shulchan saying, look, you performed a valuable service of making the connections. Lo yada shliach me'achepetz rak me'amishaleach. You know, that's enough to qualify you as a mahane. See that, Shua? Like in the end of the day, the guy did valuable work for you. You agree you wouldn't have known about the property if not for his attempt to flip it to you. Yeah, so pay him the $20,000 commission that... pay him the $20,000 commission that, you know, as if he was brokering it. That was our argument. So we actually required we said a tenai of him getting the commission though is that he has to indemnify the buyer from claims of other brokers. Because we said if he wants to claim that he was the broker, then he has to take achrayas that he's the broker. That so if there are any other. And then there was like a whole fight about whether that was fair or not. The guy really didn't like that. He didn't like that we made him indemnify against other brokers. But, you know, we thought that was pretty fair, right? So we said, look, you would have had to pay a commission on a broker anyway. So let's just treat this guy as your broker. And if other brokers come after you, he's indemnifying you from them. So like, you're not going to be at a loss. That was our. I could show you the decision if you're interested. But I like this. I like this on Arachah Shulchan. It was a good find. Zachary, you have a hand?
Yeah, is there like a principled reason why in this case the buyer is responsible for the referral fee, while in the Rashid case the seller is responsible to pay the referral fee? Is that just basically the CS of the different business situations of what's more valuable? As in the Chenvani is paying the Sar store in the Rashid case, and here it's the buyer who's paying the Sar store.
In my case, you're saying?
Yeah, in your case, the Rothschild Fund's case, it's the buyer who's paying the referral.
Yeah, interesting.
I don't know, is there an obvious principled thing of who's being Mahana who?
Yeah, I think you just have to look at what the norms are, like who usually pays, like who's considered to receive the benefit of the brokerage commission. So actually, in real estate, it's not obvious at all. Usually the seller pays the commission. The seller is the one who usually, because the seller is the one who like profits from the sale, I think. Sometimes they split it. In our case, the advertisement that the flipper put in there was that the buyer would have to pay 2%, like would have to pay a 2% commission to the broker. It's complicated because he had hired a broker to advertise the property for him. The part of the intoter was that the flipper had hired a broker to advertise the property. It was complicated because the broker wasn't Jewish. So the broker didn't sign on to the Din Torah. So part of our decision was like, look, we don't take a stand on who's the flipper, who's the broker here. We just know there's a party of flipper brokers, whatever, who made the shidduch. They'll figure out between themselves how to split the brokerage commission. That's how we're making this guy indemnify the buyer from any other claims from other brokers.
But, non-lawyers, what does indemnify mean exactly?
Shua, you
want to
explain?
Yeah, I don't know if it's just a lawyer word, but it just means you're pledging, kind of like you're making the other party safe from any claims that could come to it from like a third party. So
does that mean this flipper would have to pay that he has? Yeah, if someone's going to pay the broker, he's going to pay the broker.
Exactly.
Correct. Meaning, so like, let's say the true broker now came after. So it's even more complicated because by law you can't be a broker on a property if you don't own the property or you don't represent the owner. And here the broker was hired by the flipper who didn't really own the property. Right. So it's actually that's the reason why he didn't sign on to the litigation, because he has no. So it's very complicated. A lot of complicated pieces to this thing. And it's an interesting question whether the halachic standard should be the same as like the American standard. But the point was that this guy could collect so long as he protects the buyer from having to pay double commissions. That was the idea. All right. Good. Evan, you had a hand?
Yeah. What exactly is the, just in the Baruch HaShulchan case, what is the sort of benefit that the shliach is like gaining? Like he bought something. Like that's not like I mean like in like a classical sort of like economic standpoint. Like when I buy something, I'm like, yeah, I'm getting the object, but I don't know if like I'm incurring some benefit. Like I lost some money.
It's very common to like when you buy real estate to pay a broker.
Right.
Will pay a broker.
Real estate, I understand, or like commodity, I understand, but like it's like buying a chayfetz, like I don't know, like if anything, I kind of understand like Zacharias, where it's like the guy he bought it from should be the one.
Yeah, I think you just have to assume that, you know, obviously he's viewing this as you know, this is a standard practice, right? To view this as a thing you pay a commission on. Like for example, in a lot of professions, it's normal to get a referral fee for like connecting a buyer and a seller. I think in medicine, might be common even, you know, if you refer your patients to somebody, there are all these deals that go into things.
Companies.
What?
There's a whole, it's sort of illegal to like tell your patients to use a specific like brand of drugs, but everyone does it anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, but you can see why it has value, right? Because it's a way of getting people into the store, right?
Right. So then even all the more so, shouldn't it be the guy that the Shliach bought it from? Who incurred the benefit?
I think it's a kasha and a maisa here. I think you just have to
agree. Oh, okay. All right.
I mean, I think imagine just a background, a world in which it's not like people, right. Generally, like, so if it's like in commercial real estate, the buyers always pay a commission. That's apparently the norm. In residential, it's a little more, it varies. The idea is that sometimes it's like you buy a property for an investment, so the broker gets a commission for referring you to the property or brokering it for you.
And then sort of the second question is, does the fact that he was a shliach and sort of acting as an agent of Reuven or of the Baal, like, or whatever, the first guy, does that like come into play at all? Or is it like, no, we just, like, there's no difference if he was a shliach or if I just said like, hey, look at that nice thing over there. Like, is the shlichus aspect important to the case?
No, I don't think so. I mean, Shua thinks it's relevant because it shows the shliach acted. Shua is trying to argue that maybe it shows the shliach acted in bad faith by breaching his fiduciary duty, and that's a reason to try to find him liable. But like on the more formal reading that I'm taking, no, right? The point is that the shliach, what's important about the shlichus is just that the shliach didn't hire the mishalech as his sarsur. He gratuitously just benefited from the mishaleach, and that's enough to be mechayiv him for mitam hana.
Right, because you can think of like if I work for this flipper, right? If I was his, I did his books, right? And I see on his books, like while working for him, I see, oh, this nice property, I go and buy it, right? Would I be sort of, would that be this, a similar case? Like when you're working under someone or working for someone, would that be similar to the shliach? And I think Shua is saying, yeah, that'd be bad faith. And so like that wouldn't be this case, where you're saying like, no, it's sort of more general, just relationship between the two.
Exactly. I'm thinking more, it's just the fact that you received a valuable benefit from, right. But you can see, again, you can see how it's, it gets complicated and like, there are definitely going to be gray areas, right?
Right.
Yeah. All right, good. Any other? So for me, what I think is very important to take away is this notion that we're in a pure service industry here, and the gra in both the Shadchanus and the Sarsaris case is leaning on the sugya of Yored explicitly. All right? Yeah. So let's look at my this other example here. So we have the Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Toim Benitan Simen Peitas Gimel. So Simen Peites is a complicated Simen in Shulchan Aruch. This is about disputes between a Baal HaBayis and a Poel about how much he was paid, was he paid enough, those kinds of questions. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes those Dinim and Sif Beis, and he says, this halacha really only applies if there are Edim that the guy worked for him, and the dispute is only, so the halacha that Poel is Nishba Venotel only applies in a case where there are Edim that he in fact is a Poel. Once we know that he was a Poel, he could just take a Shvua and be Nishba Venotel, his schar on, he could swear that he wasn't yet paid, and he's Neman over the Baal HaBayis. We don't have to get into the reason why the Poel is Nishba Venotel. It's interesting, Sugya and Shvuos, about why one party should be Neman over the other. Maybe a Baal HaBayis is Tarud Bimlachto. Whatever. But look here what the Ktsos cites from the Pnei Yeshua. Anybody get a chance to prepare this? Anybody tell us the Ktsos between the Pnei Yeshua? Okay, you got to be careful with those blinds behind you. I don't know, they're dangerous. You want to make sure that Ami doesn't get his head caught in them, you know?
I don't know. I thought once kids are over three, nothing is a hazard anymore.
This is like when we went to the Shulman's for Shabbos, and I think it was after Noam turned one. And I said to Vicky Shulman, Isaac's mother, she's a pediatric ER doc. And I said, oh, like, you know, do you have to worry about SIDS after a child's 1 year old? And she's like, no, you don't. because they don't call it SIDS. SIDS is defined by death within the first year. So technically it wouldn't be called SIDS after the first year. Like, oh, that's a, yeah, quite a clinical answer. So what's going on? Anybody get, so the Consortium cites the Pnei Yehoshua, and really interesting point that Pnei Yehoshua makes. He says, who cares whether the Poel can establish that he was hired to work for the Baal HaBayis? He says, Tamalza, the Lama Tzarech Edim Shesachro, the Hakivan Shasa Imo Melacha, Sarech Leshalim, Kedina Yor Litov Sada Chavera Asa Elita. Really interesting point. The Pnei Yehoshua says, this is actually very Lamedish. The Pnei Yehoshua says, I don't understand the whole hullabaloo in the Shulchan Aruch about can you establish that you're a poel? Who cares? Everybody agrees that you did labor, and if you did labor, you're entitled to compensation. So in any event, the guy should be able to be nishba v'notel, since he's definitely entitled to his schiros. So that's really important. I think this relates actually to something that Zolti was saying earlier, and that's come up repeatedly in the Sigya about the nature of the poel's entitlement to the nature of the yored's claim to compensation. So how do you understand the Pnei Yehoshua here? And look at the Ktsos's response. Anybody see the Ktsos's answer? He says, "Nihidat sarach l'shalem, afal pishalo sachro, aval takana sacher lasagabe, kivan delo sachro." This is hugely important.
So saying that there can be a further relationship beyond just benefit conferral. Like a sachir, like connotes extra protections or obligations or something like that. We can't boil all of employment contract down to yored.
Exactly. So the Shulchan Aruch said, right? So here's what seems to be the nub of the dispute. Pnei Yehoshua is saying, who cares whether you could prove that you were hired? Once we know you're entitled to compensation, the din of shvuas hasachir will go into effect. And the Ktso says, not so fast, the din of Shvua Sachir is not about compensation. It's about whether you were a Sachir. Granted, a Yored's entitled to compensation. Nihi Ditzarech L'shalim Afal Pishlo Sachro. Aval Takana Sachir requires the fact that you were hired as a Sachir. He says, Divizelo Shaif Takana Sachir, Kivan Deme Atzmo Yarad, Kivin the Miasma Yarad. Then whether you were employed or whether you were just conferring a benefit makes a difference for a lot of these related questions. Can you be Nishba Benotel? What other dinim do you think might depend on this?
Can you say that one more time? What exactly is the Ksos's response?
Yeah. So I think the a more lumdish way of putting this issue here is that the Pnei Yehoshua thinks that there's no difference between a Yored and a Poel. A Yored is just a Hechatimsi to being a Poel. Right? Meaning, it seems like the Pnei Yehoshua is saying there's nothing special about being hired in Halacha. What really matters is, did you do a service for somebody? Did you provide a benefit? A contract is just a way of defining some of the terms of the benefit and service. How much are you going to pay the guy? You could come to a mutual agreement. How many hours is he going to work, et cetera, et cetera. But really, like, maybe, you know, even by Poelim, it's all about the service. And maybe Yored, it's all just an umdana that you wanted to hire the guy. But there are different ways of saying this. But the point is that Yored and Poel converge. A Yored is a Poel without an explicit agreement, or a Poel is a Yored with an agreement. They're just two sides of the same coin. And the Ktsos is, and therefore the Pnei Yehoshua says, you shouldn't have to establish that you were a Poel. It's sufficient to show that you provided a service in order to be, in order to qualify for a Shvua Sachir. The Ktsos says, that's wrong. The Ktsos says, with respect to Shvua Sachir, what matters is whether you were hired. You see that, Evan? Right, so the Ksos is saying that there's a world of a difference between the person who just confers a benefit without a contract, the Yoreid Mashpiach, and the person who's hired to do a service. There's two separate categories of halacha. There's no reason to reduce one to the other. And so their dinim will diverge. His nafgamina is the Shvua Sachir. He thinks that a Yoreid would not be Neman to be Nishba Venotel. Clear, Evan? Okay. I think you might have other nafgamina, for example.
Like Lotullin?
Exactly, Adin. What about Biyomo Titein Scharo and Losalin Asacher Yitchad Boker? Does that apply to Yoreid? Not obviously, right? Is there a reason to assume that it would apply to a Yoreid? Yeah, Achilas Poel is a good example. Remember Noah, one of the interpretations of Issi Ben Yehuda is, oh, could you just voluntarily come into somebody's field? Was that Noah?
Like the Kitavo.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Does Kitavo mean that you were hired? Like the Rambam's, like the Rambam's point, like what right do you have to be here if you weren't hired? Or is it like the Gemara, I think it was Ravashi, Bishem, Issi, trying to make sense of Issi, that, oh no, like it's like the public workhouse, right? Anybody could come to do malacha for the Baal Bayis and be entitled to eat, right? Which is a way of saying, oh, maybe like a Yoreid is entitled to eat. So yes, I think all these dinim might depend on how we conceptualize Yoreid. Is he the same as a Poel or is he different? And that's the machlokas here between the Ksos and the Pnei Yeshua. Any thoughts on this? I think it's a really, really helpful way of bringing out the difference between these views. Tyra, you have thoughts on this? Doesn't excite you?
I agree with a lot of things said already.
All right, old hat. But I think it's just like a beautiful way of bringing out that difference. Zolti, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, well, I don't disagree. This is one way to read the machlokes between the Pnei Yeshua and the Ksos. Is there another way to read it that it's actually more limited, if not actually disputing the nature of Yoreid, but about the nature of the Kanat Sachir and about the fact that there's a Chiyuv L'Shalim and that the Pnei Yeshua thinks, the Ksos thinks that, you know, only someone who's actually has a formal relationship as a Poel has all these the kind of stuff here and therefore can be make a take a shvua. But the Pnei Yeshua's argument is that like in Achanami, the Yoreid doesn't have the same formal relationship as an employee, but nonetheless, the very fact that he has to be paid entitles him to then be able to take the shvua.
Yeah, that's very possible. It's possible to view this as like a limited issue in Takanas Sachir. So yeah, I agree that you could look at it that way also. I definitely agree. That's a possibility. But we should keep our eyes open for other nafgamina along these lines, right? Between whether the dinim of Poel, Biyomo Titein Scharo, Takanas Sachir, Achilas Poel, whether these would apply to Yoreid. It's a good way of bringing out this distinction. Okay, let me close here by just mentioning this last shita. So all these examples, I think, speak to, I mean, this last example is machlokas, but certainly the Pnei Yeshua speaks to the connection between Poel and Yoreid. The Shadchan Sarsur example, the Rashba case of Mashpiach Mekach Havero, Mashpiach Hanuso, the discussion of the Ramban, and the discussion of the Malamed all speak to the fluid boundary between services and adding like material stuff to your friend's field, right? They're extensions of Yoreid outside of the case on Kuf Aleph of Notech, Sade Chavero, Bonech Urbas Chavero into the world of Pula. Now, I want to just point out there's an important Deah who disagrees. So that comes out of this Tosos in Ksuvis on Kuf Zayin Amud Beis. Anybody have a chance to read this Tosos? Look at this Tosos. So let me just mention it briefly. So the Gemara here talks about a case of Misha Halach Lemdina Sayam, Va'amad Achad Upirne Sesh Ishto. So Machlukas, somebody who travels abroad, and then you help the person's wife pay her expenses. Chanan Omer Ibed Es Ma'osav. Chanan thinks that you did a very nice thing, but you can't recover your expenses. And the B'nai Kohanim Gedolim disagree. They say you could take a shvua and recover your expenses. And then you have this machlokas between Rabbi Dosa and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai about who's right. Rabbi Dosa agrees with the B'nai Kohanim Gedolim, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says he agrees with Chanan. He says, Hiniach Mosav al Karen Atzvi. Great halachic phrase, right? That you tossed away your money, right? You put it on a deer's antlers and you knew the deer was going to run away with it. We actually encountered this phrase in our Tzitumta discussion. The Marshach used it to say that had they been using halacha, the business deal would have been so incomprehensible that he was Miniach Mosav al Karen Atzvi. Right, he was so unprotected. So yeah, this machlokas here, whether the person who paid for the wife's expenses can recover those expenses. Tosos here asks, he's like, I don't understand, why is there a machlokas? Isn't it Yorei L'toch Sada Chavero Mashbicho entitled to be compensated? Can he recover Mashahena also? So of course, everyone should paskin like the B'nai Kohanim Gedolim, that you should recover in this case also. It's a Yorei case. You can see Lekalak Shuye, Mehadi Kaimalan, Yorid Toksada Khaver Venata Shalobir Shus, Shamanok Aris, we'll talk about that. Denosan Khaver Masha Haneo. Tosus answers that there's a difference. So Lekalak Shuye, you shouldn't ask this question. Because Hasam Hashevach Be'en, Hasam Hashevach Be'enhu, Vidinhu Sheito. Okay. What is going on here? I think there are two ways to understand this answer. Well, what Tosus is doing is he's breaking the application. He's breaking the extension, or he's denying the extension of Yoreid to this class of case. The question is, what's the salient feature of this class of case to which he thinks it's not extended? So what do you think the right way to interpret this Tosis is? What does he mean? A few things you could say here.
One approach is like the Kantian approach, I think. There's like an actual property, like ownership that the worker has
Did you say Kantian?
Yeah, like Kant's like approach that like a worker owns like what he like what you produce.
Lockean.
Oh, sorry. I'm a little tired this morning.
It's okay.
So the point is that when there's like your de Javero, so like when you actually put the tree in. The sapling in the ground, so like that's like something that's like shevach bein that you own, you have some possession of, and din hu shito, therefore like it makes sense that you're able to get benefit from it, as opposed to here where you just like threw away your money and you gave it away to like some creditor.
Great. So I think it sounds to me like you're saying that the distinction here is about the be'en, I think is the real issue. Is that right? Meaning, is there some claim of mamoni gabach? Is there some tangible?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there some tangible thing of mine in your rishus? Right, Yoni?
Yeah.
In the case of Yorid Tovsad Shel Chavero, there's some like a thing of mine that I put into your property, the shevach, and that's what entitles me to compensation. And that's not the case in any of these schar pula cases. Is that right? It's not the case where I just, pay for the almana's costs of living and things like that, right? There's none of my stuff in this woman's backyard.
Yeah, I think that the other way to read this, which I don't think is as a good or cleaner reading, but I think the other way to read it is it's just more similar to the Ramban with the Mashbiach Ari, and they're making a similar type of chilak.
Yeah. Exactly. Meaning, is this about a shevach issue or is it about a be'en issue? That's a way, one way of putting it. And it's actually not clear because he starts off talking about hasam ha-shevach be'en hu v'dinu sheyito. That sounds like mamoni gabach. It's my tree in your backyard. That's what entitles me to take it away. But then he closes by saying hacha lo hishbiach lo shum shevach. You know, so it sounds like, oh, you weren't mashbiach at all. I didn't, you know, all I was, I prevented the almana from suffering, right? But did I improve like your prop, like did I create more value? No. So it almost sounds in this, you know, in this read that the shevach part might be what he's getting at. Although you might say shum shevach nechasim, you know, the nechasim thing might be about like something about the assets, right? Did I do something to the assets to improve them in some way? So I think there are two ways of reading this tosas. Either it's about like the en mamoni gabach, or as Zolt said, something more about shevach versus minyas hefsid. If it's the former, then it seems to be a distinction between pu'ulos and things. If it's the latter, then it turns more on this minyas hefsid versus shevach distinction that the Ramban had. So it's a bit of an open question which way to go in tosos. I don't have a strong view about which one of them is the better read. Anybody have a strong view on this, about which is the right way to go here? No.
Evan? I mean, the shevach nechasim seems to point in one direction. Like, it's not just shevach; it's shevach nechasim versus shevach be'ein.
Yeah,
but.
That supports the pu'ula versus.
Yeah, but not necessary. Like, I can see it both ways.
Yeah. Any thoughts on this?
Yeah, it's like interesting that when he quotes the Mavriach, when Tosas quotes the Mavriach Arikis, he actually like says that it's that the afagav de mehana oso, which I think is like even strong. I don't remember how the Ramban characterized the case. But I don't know if even the Ramban said as strongly as like mehana, yeah. You know, giving benefit to the person.
Right. So thinks, the Ramban just talked about silok dovko. Toso seems to concede as mehana. So you're saying maybe that supports the be'en shevach nechasim read.
Correct. Yeah.
About how like reified in how like rebleich is the like how concrete. In the assets is the hana,
right?
Right. Yeah. As a pure, as opposed to the kind of hana that the tentacle can't attach to. Yeah. Good. Good. That's very helpful. So let's stop here. What I want to pick up. So this is a good survey of the extension of Yored to Poel, and is Yored and Poel the same idea? What I want to pick up with next time. Is this discussion here on page 6 of the Makoros of the reversibility. Does the Baal HaSadeh have the right to say Tol Eitzcha V'Avonecha? That's what I want to explore next time. Could you say, I don't want the service, take everything back, reverse it. I don't want to have to pay you. Very fascinating question, not addressed in the Gemara. The Gemara talks about the opposite case. Can the Yored say Eitzai V'Avonai Ani Notel? Can he demand to undo it? The Rishonim want to know whether is a Yored forced to pay, or could the Yored say, you know, lo hein velo scharon, I don't want the benefit. What's up, Evan?
Yeah, isn't there that whole back and forth in the Gemara where the Baal says, no, I don't, the Baal Sada says, I don't want it?
Yeah, so it's a Machlokas Rishonim whether that included a taina of eight, you know, take it back.
Right.
Or saying like, you know, I don't want it, but like it's stuck here, kind of thing. We'll see. That's the Rush and the Ramban discussion. So take a look at these makoros. It might depend on like what kind of a sada is it. Some cases it's hard to reverse. You know, sometimes there's like work where the labor is done already, so it's just not reversible. So you look at some of these makoros. There's some very fascinating stuff going on there. All right. Great. Shkayach, everyone. Let's pick up on Thursday morning. Great. Take care. See you all then.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye, Akir. Bye, Ami. Bye, Ami. Bye-bye. Good to see you. Bye. I'm glad you came to the Chabura. Did you enjoy?
Yeah.
Was it fun to see everyone in the Chabura and hang out with us?
Yeah.
Great. Next time, if you have something you want to share, if you want to share like a Dvar Torah with us, you should share it with us in the beginning of Chabura. Does that?
He did that. We had a big family Hanukkah party, like a very big extended family thing, and on Zoom, and we logged on, and everyone says hi to us, and I unmute, and Ami immediately says, "We can drive on Hanukkah and on some days of Pesach."
Nice. That's great. Absolutely. Ami, so on Thursday morning, if you're not in school for whatever reason, you could definitely share Dvar Torah with us, all right?
Yeah, he's off this week. I didn't realize until last week, but he's this week off.
I hear. All right, Ami.
School's going to be open again.
Do you prefer school or do you prefer being home with your Abba?
Why is everyone leaving now?
Why is everyone leaving now?
Because the Chabura is over.
Okay.
I think Ami, it sounds like you want Chabura to go longer, right? Was this too short for you?
Yeah, it was too short for me.
All right, Ami, we're going to get along. We're going to get along just fine. All right, guys, I'll see you on Thursday. Bye, Ami. Have a great day with your Abba.
Yeah, bye. Have a